2 years of the pandemic have been tough on the hospitality industry. We'll get a status update on how Iowa restaurants and hotels are doing and the challenges many still face on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa PBS Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
Fuel Iowa is a voice and a resource for Iowa's fuel industry. Our members offer a diverse range of products, including fuel, grocery, and convenience items. They help keep Iowans on the move in rural and urban communities. Together, we fuel Iowa.
Small businesses are the backbone of Iowa's communities, and they are backed by Iowa banks. With advice, loans, and financial services, banks across Iowa are committed to showing small businesses the way to a stronger tomorrow. Learn more at iowabankers.com.
For decades, Iowa Press has brought you political leaders and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond. Celebrating 50 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa PBS. This is the Friday, May 20th edition of Iowa Press. Here is Kay Henderson.
We're coming up on a holiday weekend and maybe the kickoff of the summer travel season, and people are heading out to restaurants and hotels and tourist sites. We've gathered a couple of people who are experts on Iowa's hospitality industry to talk about the impact the pandemic has had and what may be ahead. You may recognize Jessica Dunker. She's been on the program before. She is the president and CEO of the Iowa Restaurant Association and a new group that's been formed that's called the Iowa Hotel and Lodging Association. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. One day I'll get to come back and it will be a joyful time in my industry. It just hasn't come quite yet.
Our other guest is Mike Whalen. He is the president and CEO of Heart of America Corporation. And for people who aren't familiar with that, Mike, tell us a little bit about it.
I'm best known for 44 years ago, I started a little 100-seat restaurant called the Iowa Machine Shed, dedicated to the Iowa farmer in Davenport, and built a company into a restaurant and hotels, and we have quite a few hotels within Iowa, so we're on both sides of this equation.
Great. Well, welcome to you as well. Joining me in asking questions today is David Pitt of the Associated Press.
Thanks for having me back. Well, let's start out with the report released this morning by the state of Iowa, the unemployment report, the weekly report, or the monthly report that we see. And on Friday morning, it was released, and it showed that Iowa's unemployment rate dropped to 3%, and that's a good trend. But it also showed that lodging and food was the largest increased industry segment in the last year, with something around 10,000 jobs. So maybe, Jessica, you could tell us to what do you attribute that?
Yeah, so a couple of things. When the pandemic hit, we were the industry that put the most people on unemployment, obviously. And we had to fight our way back from that. And at the end of 2021, we were down still about 25,000 jobs. So as we continue to reopen and we continue to have people coming back to the restaurants as consumers, we also have been just hiring, at least trying to. And so we are still down about 10,000 jobs from where we were in 2019. And in 2019, I think Mike would agree with this, we needed 10,000 workers. So it's no surprise that we would be showing growth, but I can tell you we could show substantially more growth if there were more people out there to hire.
Mike, do you want to respond to that as well and talk about that a bit?
Oh, people say the unemployment rate is 3%, I would probably say if it was properly calculated, it would be minus 15%. If you could ask people how many more people would you hire if they were there. We've clawed our way back, and we're probably down about 10% from where we were in 19, but it's been difficult. It's been a real challenge, and our biggest challenge, to get back in business.
So is it more difficult to hire people to work in a hotel or to work in a restaurant?
Interesting statistic that I read that something like over 70% of the people that resigned their jobs during COVID had regrets later and missed that job. I think we're probably at the top of that list. You know, restaurants and hotel business can be tough and demanding jobs, but I think you increasingly see people miss it and come back.
Well, I saw some headline about people are unretiring.
They are unretiring.
Yeah, it's interesting. So prior to COVID, our largest growing, fastest growing worker demographic was age 55 and above. And so since the restaurant, on the restaurant side in particular, we are such a part-time industry, we were really seeing that people were unretiring or doing fun jobs, fun money for themselves in our industry. From the standpoint of what's harder to hire, a hotel or restaurant, I will tell from a recovery standpoint, we are down about 10% from where we were pre-COVID on hotel employees. But in the restaurant industry, our latest data tells us that 35% of the restaurants in the state are 30% below their COVID, pre-COVID staffing levels. So they are desperate to hire people, and they are taking really drastic steps. They are still not putting their tables back. They're closing an extra day a week. They are doing, they have, I'll bet Mike is doing jobs he hasn't done in his restaurants every now and again. I've got owners who are washing dishes, bussing tables, working the line because they have to, because they just don't have the staff.
And have you seen a trend among younger people? I mean, obviously in the fast food industry, it was a place where like someone could go in high school, perhaps get one of their first jobs. Are you seeing any difference in younger people entering the businesses that you run?
We've always kind of been the first employer. You know, I think something like 15% of Americans at one point said their first job was at McDonald's. Astonishing statistic. But you're seeing the young people come back to the restaurant business. And as I said, a lot of folks that maybe thought, well, you know, it was a tough thing to do and I really kind of should move on, are coming back saying they have what I call the sickness. They just enjoy the business and they miss it.
One of the things that's the root of part of our problem is there just are not enough people in the state. And they're just, we need more people to live in the state of Iowa. And we are competing, we statistically, I don't know how many people worked at McDonald's first, but one in three people had their first job in the restaurant industry. And that's still true today. But for the first time ever, we are competing with industries for teens that we have never competed with. Yeah. I use my own children as an example. I have 17-year-old twin boys. One is a certified nursing assistant. He's a CNA and will be able to work as a CNA after his 18th birthday next week. And the second is working in daycare. And so daycare centers and certified nursing assistants were not high school students 5 years ago. And so we really are finding that we're now attracting kids that are 14 and 15 into our industry. And the child labor laws prevent them from doing a lot of things that we need to have done.
Why did you form this new group?
The Iowa Hotel and Lodging Association? Because Mike Whalen called me on the phone and said to me, and this was, it was shortly after the state of Iowa. The state of Iowa really handled restaurants well, and I give them a lot of credit for how they worked with restaurants and helped. But there was not a voice at the table for the lodging and the hotel and lodging. And so things like the state's restaurant and bar grant program, hotels were not eligible for those things. And so we really felt like by having a voice and an advocacy group from the very beginning helped one or two segments of the industry. But hotel and lodging, they were really left behind, both at the state and the federal level.
Well, Mike Whalen, apparently you saw a need here at the state level. What about at the federal level?
Well, it was frustrating that hotels just seemed to be not part of the programs. They were eligible for the first round of PPP, but noticeably, one of the things that is our biggest challenge is property taxes. My CFO had to tell me one day in April of 2020 that our daily property tax burden at Heart of America was $27,000 a day. Our revenues at that point were a couple thousand a day. And so the PPP money was not eligible to pay property taxes, and we had to pay them even though we might be closed.
And what's going on at the federal level now regarding the hospitality industry?
Very little. Very little. Hotels leaned heavily into the EIDL program. Those are the emergency disaster loans. But those are loans, and loans come due. So that's one of the big worries, is the burden of debt that a lot of our hotels have taken on. You know, somebody said something brilliant to me about the hotel industry that I don't think people thought about, which is, you know, restaurants could pivot. but I couldn't do sleep to go with my hotel. And so really, they were just in a position where they had to take on debt. There were loans available, but you can never recoup. You can never recover. You can never pivot a hotel room night back. It's a perishable. It's gone. And so, you know, I'm worried for the hotel industry that we haven't seen closures. We haven't seen bankruptcies, but we will, because they will not be able to ever recover with the debt load they've taken on just to try to survive during COVID.
Well, Mike, what's your assessment of that particular data point?
Well, I think so. I think that a lot of lenders learned after 2008, 2009, not to be too abrupt with yanking loans if somebody's behind. But at some point, you have to pay the piper, and you are going to see a lot of hotels go onto the market. I'm starting to see a radical increase coming through my email, lender-owned hotels in particular, and that will come to roost, no doubt about it.
So to try to make it a little bit more clear, can you tell us, like, did you get help from the federal government and not the state government, or where did the assistance come from if you received any offer the hotel industry? Because we know restaurants received some.
We received some PPP money in round one. Okay. In round two, because we had more than 20 operating entities, we were ineligible to do it. So pretty much after round one, we were off the table. I know we did receive some grants from the state of Iowa, which I think were about $25,000 apiece. But
in the restaurant side.
On the restaurant side.
Yeah, not the hotel
but,
side.
But
yeah.
Not the hotel side.
Yeah. Most of the money that went to the hotels that are like the independent small hotels were federal programs. They could qualify for maybe the Employee Retention Tax Credit, which is a federal program. The EIDL, which is the Emergency Disaster Relief Grants, which is an SBA-run federal program, and then some received PPP, but there was never a carve-out for hotels. There was never that recognition that the hotel industry was potentially suffering. Now, I will say this about the state of Iowa. They recently did a program that is a meeting incentive program, and actually the Restaurant Association and the Lodging Association was selected as the vendor to help them administer this program, where they are incenting people back into meeting in person, and you have to increase hotel nights and have hotel nights associated with this incentive program. So I think the state is doing things to increase tourism and hotel night stays now, but that's not direct relief paid to a hotel.
The single biggest thing in what we're seeing in the hotel business, and we saw it last year in the summer, was a huge surge of leisure travel that we were not prepared for because we just didn't have people. You're right. Kim and I did about 100 hours of laundry last summer.
Yep.
We couldn't be in all of our places, but at least we could be in one and be in the trenches. But that's the other element that hasn't come back is the business traveler is still back, maybe at 50% level. Mm-hmm. And so that's an element that needs to come back. What we did find, though, is interesting, and I mentioned property taxes. And I have to give a shout out to Polk County. Polk County was unique among the jurisdictions we were in because they proactively reduced assessments by 30% in the aftermath of 2020. And some jurisdictions, including some in Iowa, actually raised our assessment on hotels that had been closed for the better part of a year and a half. Mm. So that's an element that could be done to help hotels recover over the course of a number of years.
Only sitting here with a hotelier could I say there is an industry that's more difficult to be in than the restaurant industry today, and that would be the hotels.
I'm wondering, as we hear about, you know, we're maybe scaling up in the number of COVID cases, how that impacts traffic in a restaurant and traffic in a hotel, or if people are just, in Iowa particular, just continuing to patronize restaurants and hotels.
Do you want to start?
We have seen some phenomenal numbers in our restaurants, and to be brutally honest, a lot of our restaurants are smashing through 2019 levels. Interesting enough, because our restaurants have big exhaust hoods and they constantly turn the air over, we had virtually little or no cases of staff COVID, even in the peak in 2020 and the early part of 2021. yet we were kind of demonized as kind of the place you could catch it. And we all found it extremely frustrating and ironic that we were kind of made the poster child.
I will tell you that from the Restaurant Association standpoint, the last thing we're thinking about right now is COVID, because we are, for the first time as an industry, facing 15% increase in cost of goods simultaneously with 15% increase in cost of labor. And, so we're trying to compete with labor. Wages are going up. We don't even mind paying the wages. When we polled Iowa operators, finding people was far ahead of paying people the wages they're demanding as the reason that they can't do what they want to do. And lots of people are having record revenues, but almost no one is having record profits.
Oh, that's
right.
Yeah, yeah, the idea of the $15 minimum wage, I think for the most part, certainly back in the kitchens, that's kind of a thing in the distant past at this point.
And that actually goes into the question that I had next, and that is, my own experience with restaurants recently is that as I go back to restaurants I went to before the COVID, is that I'm seeing smaller menus, perhaps. And maybe you can talk about that trend as to what's behind that. And I have a feeling it's some of the things that you were just talking about there. But I wonder if it's food supply chain issues or anything like that.
So there's a couple things, and then, Mike, I'm sure you'll want to chime in. But we have to streamline everything right now. So you have to make your purchases so that whatever you're buying, you can put in multiple places on a menu. There simply is not the line staff in a kitchen to make a lot of things. And so pre-COVID, we were already telling people in the industry, your menus are too big. You've got to streamline. And we're now telling people that you have to figure out how to do this with fewer people forever. They're either not coming back, or we're not going to have the population gains. And so you are seeing operational adjustments in every type of establishment.
There are supply chain disruptions. I never thought I'd see a time when it was really hard to find a plastic cup or a straw.
Or chicken wings.
Or chicken wings or porterhouse steaks for some reason. So it's a combination of huge price increases, something I had not seen since 1979 when I first was in the business. But very similarly, I think we've reprinted menus twice in the last 6 or 7 months because of the combination of supply chain disruptions and because of increased prices.
Have you had to cut hours of operation or maybe the days of operation at some locations? I mean, it seems like that happened at one point in time. But
we did a lot. At first, it was a lot of daytime closures. And as we could find people, we'd add back things. Mm-hmm. We're pretty much fully back, but just got a call this morning from one of our restaurants in Wisconsin suggesting that maybe we close during the day again because of the difficulty in finding people. So we're hoping that doesn't occur.
This next question's to you, Mike. It occurs to me that as this pandemic is happening, you're also facing the kind of competition that taxi companies faced with the birth of Uber and Lyft. Are you looking as an industry for some sort of regulation that's statewide for Airbnb and Vrbo and those sorts of online options for housing and accommodations?
It will be an issue at some point in Iowa. I know some jurisdictions that we're in have actually said if you're going to do an Airbnb, you need to pay the hospitality tax, for example, the pillow tax, as most people would call it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's for a starter to make a level playing field, that those taxes and other things have to be paid on an equal basis.
Is that something you're lobbying for at the State House, Jessica?
Yeah,
not yet. Hey, not yet. We walked into some things that we had not expected in our first year. So certainly long term, we want to see an even playing field in all types of the hospitality industry. And
are we seeing, it seems to me like there may be a similar trend with restaurants and the food delivery services, like the Uber Eats, DoorDash, that kind of thing. So I'm wondering if you're seeing a similar kind of a challenge.
We have some pretty strong feelings, I think you're aware, about the third-party delivery and the absolute unfairness in the way how it casts a restaurant. We have legislation, and it is literally today on the one-yard line. It's gone through both the Iowa House and the Iowa Senate. It's waiting for a final floor debate and then hopefully on to the governor. And it does really basic things. it doesn't let a third-party delivery system just take Mike's logo and take Mike's menu and put it in their mobile app because the consumer believes you have a relationship and Mike might not have any idea who it is. It also has a certain amount of liability so that if the driver runs over someone with a car, it isn't Mike's fault that that has happened. And then really basic food safety, like you can't have your pets or your sick children or smoke or vape in the car, and that you have a bag that keeps something the temperature it's supposed to be. I mean, it's really, really basic right now, and we think it's good public policy. It has sanctions that will be taken against the third-party delivery systems that break the rules and are caught breaking the rules, and so we're very hopeful the legislature gets this one done this session. It's really needed.
Well, Jessica, I've written about this bill before, and it had a little bit of a disturbing debate when French fries were mentioned in
our house. It sure did. There is a study, it was conducted by U.S. Foods, where they reached out to delivery drivers all over the country and found out that 28% of them admitted to at least once trying the food before they delivered it. And, you know, we always laugh about this with the association because we're like, 28% said yes, but, you know, a percentage of them probably thought I shouldn't answer this as yes on that survey. So, you know, we just go pick up your food. We would love to let you have carry out. We will bring it to your car. It's so much better in every, from safety, from cost. Just pick up your food.
Did these services help at all, though, during the pandemic? Like, get food to people when people were afraid to go out and maybe pick it up themselves? I mean, I'm just wondering if there was any kind of a benefit at all during that toughest time.
Well, 70% of operators that were surveyed said that the food delivery services didn't make up even 30% of the revenue they lost. And so we haven't even tried to legislatively address the financial portion of this, but consumers pay a delivery fee and don't realize that the restaurants, whatever the ticket is, pay anyway from 20 to 30% of that ticket cost. Mm. We're in a 5% net profit business. So it's pretty much money walking out the door with every order. We just hope you'll come in eventually if you like what was delivered.
Do we know if Iowa is an eaten out kind of a state? Do we know how many restaurants there are per capita compared to other places?
Do you want to? I can address it, but go ahead. All right. So, you know, Iowa is absolutely an eaten out kind of state, and particularly Des Moines is. And per capita, we are in the among the top in the nation. And so, especially when the patios open up and patio season's coming, and that's, you know, a whole nother workforce issue, right? Is we do like to go out and enjoy our restaurants. I'll tell you what's happening, though. Inflation is hurting everyone, and every consumer is being hurt. And we are hitting those thresholds on pricing, on what people are willing to pay for a drink or a hamburger or a steak or whatever is out there. And we're seeing changes in consumer purchase patterns. We still go out because we like to go out, but we don't order an appetizer. We order water instead of a drink. We don't order desserts. And that is worrisome back in that profitability model. How do we serve the people because they're still coming, but do it in a way that we can actually keep the lights on?
Our last price increase that we took on menus, you do it with bated breath. You kind of hold your breath and see. And people didn't say anything at all because I think they were at the grocery store and saw what was happening on their direct food purchases. Mm. But we are now starting to see, I think, a softening of demand, because I think you're starting to see people maybe compete with $5 gas or for at least $4 and something gas in Iowa and other things like that. And we're discretionary, so we're fearful about what that's going to happen.
As we have just a couple of minutes left, that kind of feeds into my next question, which is a future-looking question, and that is, what if COVID comes back? I mean, are we prepared to deal with it? And then secondly, where do you think we'll be 10 years from now? What impact would this coronavirus have on the industry, you know, for perhaps in the next decade? Anything lasting?
I think the lasting thing will be is that, you know, when bankers used to ask me what I was scared of, a pandemic was certainly never on my list. And I think right now, if you're going to be starting up a small restaurant, I think you're going to have to struggle to find somebody to lend you the money that's confident that you could weather that if it did occur again. And so I think that'll be the residual effect on a long-term basis?
I would say 10 years from now, what we're going to see is technology moving into places we didn't expect in the restaurant industry.
Absolutely.
Whether it's a driverless car delivering the food, if it's automation in the kitchen, you're already starting to see automation in your own ordering. And, you know, restaurants are the oldest profession. And, you know, I know people would disagree, but restaurants are the oldest profession. And we have adapted through everything throughout time. And we will adapt again and come out on the other end serving and meeting the needs of people. Because that's why we're in the business.
Well, speaking of time, we are out of it for this conversation, but we may have you back to check on the things that you've been talking about today.
Thanks for joining us.
And thank you for watching this edition of Iowa Press. You can check out every edition online at iowapbs.org, or you can watch us at our regular broadcast times Friday at 7:30 p.m. or on Sundays at noon. For everyone here at Iowa PBS, thanks for watching.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa PBS Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
Fuel Iowa is a voice and a resource for Iowa's fuel industry. Our members offer a diverse range of products, including fuel, grocery, and convenience items. They help keep Iowans on the move in rural and urban communities. Together, we fuel Iowa.
Small businesses are the backbone of Iowa's communities, and they are backed by Iowa banks. With advice, loans, and financial services, banks across Iowa are committed to showing small businesses the way to a stronger tomorrow. Learn more at iowabankers.com.